Dude, it feels weird. Look at you guys. Look how old you fuckers look.
The first thing Shannon said to me was something was different. And I said, yeah, we just haven't seen each other for 4 weeks. That's what's different about me. Yeah. Having said all of that, as the road towards the Larry O'Brien Trophy has begun, an incredible road trip in fashion, we're back. Hi.
Feels good. Feels great.
It's only been a minute.
Are you going to grow your beard out? Dude, no, grow the beard out one time, dude.
Oh, relax. What? No.
One time. Fashion. Okay,
this is Road Trip. I'm Allie Clifton. He's Channing Frye. What the fuck, Google Chrome? And he's Richard Jefferson. Why can't you grow the beard?
Yeah.
No, I don't want. I have before. I just don't want to.
Could you actually go on camera with it?
I think Channing should grow dreads. I think we should get your hair really, really long, and we should get dreads. Maybe get Channing with a Fu Manchu.
Dude. Right?
Like one of those like really long. Yeah, yeah. Anyways.
I do grow hair like a catfish, my brother says. It just gets long. Like, you remember what was that movie, Kill Bill? Remember that dude who was the teacher?
Yeah, Pai Mei. Pai Mei.
Dude, yes. that's how my hair gets. Richard can have the full, I can't grow any of this. And I'm 41.
He's still a little boy.
Just get out of here. No. Yeah. Oh, man.
Channing, when you hit puberty, you will be able to also.
Oh, thank you, Richard. Dude, I'm going through that right now with my 13 and 12-year-old. Good God almighty. Dude, the emotional roller coaster I'm riding right now with those kids is hilarious. Completely
default. Well, having said that, think about the emotional roller coaster they're going through.
I know. They don't know what the hell's going on. They'll cry over a basketball game or a TV show. And I'm like, what? Okay, never mind.
It only gets more beautiful for your daughter. All right, so we're going to begin with this because the last time we recorded, there was actually 2 weeks left. It was March 30th. There were 2 weeks left in the regular season. The way in which the regular season ended was in and of itself. I know that the play-in tournament is not a part of postseason, but it is the reason why, Channing, as you just mentioned, we've had incredible first couple of games in each series. So what letter grade would you give the postseason right now and why? We'll go from there.
Age before beauty, Richard?
No, she said Channing. She started off with you.
Did she really?
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
literally said your name.
Damn it. Sorry. I'm literally paying attention, but I'm not. The coffee's kicking in. I give it an A+.
A+. Wow.
Here's why. One, nobody has any clue what's about to fucking happen because Minnesota's new, OKC's new, New York is new. What's up with Indiana? Like Pascal Siakam is the second coming of Jordan right now. Like you look at the Knicks, how exciting that game was. Boston, Miami, Orlando Magic are probably the most anticlimactic, but every other series has been awesome. Like the Lakers going up 14 plus two games in a row, the Clippers Dallas game, crazy. And we have like superstars. You have new guys, you have young guys, you have teams that didn't have a lot of, to me, I didn't know if Minnesota's defense was going to translate. But the thing that I'm impressed with is like the other guys, like Jaden McDaniels, like, you know, Rudy Gobert's out there. I don't know. Dark room, Rudy Gobert's. He must have went before the playoffs. He's balling. Anthony Edwards is doing his thing. So I'm just impressed. I'm impressed.
I'd give it a B+. Because I think the OKC series would be better if Zion was healthy. I think the Pacers series would be better if Giannis was healthy. I think the Knicks series, the Knicks Philly series would be better if Embiid was healthy. It's just like when you have three players, especially Embiid and Giannis, that can actually shift the balance of the playoffs, the who wins the championship. I think the Pelicans in that matchup, they could have, in my opinion. So I think there's a lot of, we know that the Pacers can beat the Bucks with Giannis. We know that they can do it. They've done it multiple times, sent him home. The one game one game he didn't, he had 64. So then Giannis comes out of that series. So that, and that team is better now because they have Pascal Siakam. So, like, it's one of those things that, like, I think these series could be better. And unfortunately, because of some injuries, because of, you know, I even think the Knicks with Julius Randle. I just think that there's a lot of series that could be significantly better, right, if we just didn't have the types of players that could shift the balance of power. And those are some of the players that we're missing. Kawhi being one of them, but he's back.
Jimmy
being one of them. Yeah, that Boston-Miami series would look a lot different if Jimmy Butler was playing. So it's just one of those things that, like, that's the part. Like, injuries are a part of it, but it's just like we have a few guys that are missing that have actually shifted the balance of power. And those are the guys that aren't playing right now. That's, yes, all the new players are great. You want them. But if I'm being greedy, I would give it a B plus because of that reason.
For that reason, I give it still an A because it only affects one conference, really. Like, it only affects Boston's going to have a cakewalk to the thing.
Well, no, it affects the Pelicans. No Zion.
I know, but let's be real. Nobody assumes that OKC is a contender, right? And the West is a beast. Meaning the Clippers, we're just
about the overall.
Minnesota, overall, okay.
But I'm the overall playoffs overall, and
Eastern Conference.
See your reference.
She said overall affected, drastically affected, yes, more just than like, the Western Conference.
But just like in years where Clay being hurt and then Bron and AD getting hurt when they did, like during a couple of their stretches KD. So I'm just saying there's been years where there's been Western Conference teams that were affected by injury. There's, you know what I'm saying? It's like last year, there was a bunch of teams banged up early on. You know, Sacramento vaulted themselves up a little bit higher. OKC looked like they were going to challenge. So this year was the Western Conference that's been affected. Other years, all right, this year was the Eastern. Other years has been a Western. I agree.
I'm going to throw out some thoughts from each conference. Excuse me. We're going to start in the East, but how about this? It's going to be my little segue. It is crazy that we are talking about the playoffs without Steph, Clay, and Draymond. And speaking of Clay, I almost knocked him off his bike yesterday because I was getting coffee in Hermosa and I went to open up my car door. And here comes this man with a hat on and just like curly hair coming out of the bottom, just riding a beach cruiser. And I was like, was that Clay? Looked like a fisherman. I was like, was that Clay Thompson?
He has a boat.
It was wild. Having said that, Sixers-Knicks is where we're going to start, obviously, because a wild finish and ending, as we all know. But it was just the fourth time in the play-by-play era dating back to the 96-97 season that a team won a playoff game after trailing by at least 5 points in the last 30 seconds. Can you guys guess the most two recent teams to do that? And they went on and eventually won the NBA title.
Ooh. Oh, the Toronto Raptors.
No.
What? Remember, I thought they were trailing by 5.
I gave you a hint of the segue with Klay Thompson.
Oh, Klay Thompson and the Warriors.
In 2015 against the Spurs.
Oh, this happened. I forgot about that.
Yep.
Oh, didn't they do it again?
No, I'm sorry. I got that wrong. Golden State versus the Pels in 2015 on their way to their first title. And then the other was the Heat against the Spurs game 6 in 2013.
Oh. That crazy comeback. Far away. Yes, just anyway, 10 years ago.
I just said, at least I gave you the most recent ones since 96-97. Do the Sixers, like Joel said, actually Joel said we're going to win this series.
Yeah.
Do they have a chance?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
For sure, without a doubt.
Have a chance? For sure. It's hard watching Joel Embiid hobble around on that wibbly wobbly knee, right? But he's still getting 30. Like, his team has chances. Like, that's what's crazy. I mean, if we didn't watch the game and we were to take a 30,000 foot view and we would say, oh, the Knicks won at home. They were the better seed. They won at home. Now they have to go to Philly, you know, they have an extra day. They get to get their body right. They get to, you know, rest. I know they lost, but I like their game plan. I like their game plan. They have done a bang-up job on Jalen Brunson. And you would take that. You would say, if Josh Hart beats me, if DiVincenzo beats me, like, we're living. But this dude, you remember, like, Richard knows, when we played Indiana and Paul George, we had a conversation going, who's the one guy that can beat us by getting 50? Him. And You make it. We're like, we're going to double team him at half court. We can't let him play. And they're not letting
that guy in that series.
Oh, dude. Huh?
Who was it?
Who won what?
Who was that guy in that NBA series?
Paul George. In 2016.
You're basically saying, like, he could score all the points. He could score all the points.
And he was the guy that you guys were willing to live with. Okay.
Yes. Like, you just didn't want to get the entire team involved.
Involved. Yeah. Got it.
Switch that. No. Switch that for the – what happened, Richard?
Oh, what were you saying? He was the
one – I was going to say switch that, meaning we would double team – like, do you remember what we did to DeMar DeRozan? Anytime he got it for the most part in certain sections, we wouldn't let him play one-on-one. We just go send. That's what they're doing with Jalen Brunson. Now, Josh Hart balled the fuck out on that first game. And then last game, they had a chance, right? Think about it. They were up 5, and then they just made some bad turnovers, and guys hit crazy shots. So if you're going to look at the score box and say, what was Jalen Brunson, like 9-for-28 or something like that? You got to live with that. There's nothing else you could do because you don't want to allow – you're not going to say, oh, Jalen Brunson gets going now. And these other dudes are getting going. You just got to rely on your defense and say, hey, like, anybody but him.
I don't think that the Philadelphia 76, I've just never been a believer in them. I love their talent. I just consistently over the past few years, Joel Embiid is not 100%, and it's hard to, you know, and it's just hard. It's hard to watch. Like I said, he's one of those balance of power guys that if he's 100%, it can change. And he's doing his best. You have to commend him to do all of the things that he did to get back for the postseason and for his team to fight. But I do think that they can win some games. He should believe that they can win the series if he's on the court. But I just don't know if I could bet on them or say that they are the team that can come back if they are down. Yes. Can they win some games? Yes. But Channing, you know this. Would we have won a championship if LeBron was at 85%?
No.
No. Would we have won it if he was at 90%?
No.
He had to be 100% for us to go out there and play and that's for us to have a chance. And so to say that Joel Embiid can win some games, yes. But to say that they can make a deep, deep playoff run and that he's going to get into shape, the only person I've ever seen is Kawhi. On that Toronto run, right? On that Toronto run, he's the one player that looked like he was hobbled, but he was just so efficient. It's just hard to imagine that.
So you're saying that Philly is not the team that jumps off the board to you that could defy the 8% odds of teams that have gone on to win after being down 0-2. Got it. So from one series down 0-2 to the other series, we go to the West. And actually, I do want to ask this question to kind of segue this conversation because they were two of the wild finishes of Tuesday night, Monday night, whenever that was, because everyone around here, I still can't believe it happened with the Lakers. Can we get rid of the two-minute report?
What did the two-minute report say? What did the Laker two-minute report say?
Well, come to find out, it was perfect, minus a defensive 3-second non-call on Jokic, but that D'Lo was not within 2 minutes.
I mean, so it's just a way to
hold. One call that everyone was pissed off about, my point is, was not.
But did the league answer that call about why they had the discrepancy?
They answered it right there on the court. No, but marginal, you know, contact.
That was one of the, that again, that wasn't the deciding factor in the game. And look, you give the credit to the Nuggets. And we'll get all of the blah, blah, blah bullshit out the way first. You give all the credit to the Nuggets. The Nuggets, they're the defending champions. That's what they did. We did it in 2016-17. We came back from a really, you know, from being down. Champions do that. They walk their way back. That's who they are. Now, Lakers, I just want to talk about one specific play call and why I'm just confused by that. If a player can jump up, ball can be gone, you can swing through and hit him in the face and that be marginal contact, then you're allowed to hit three-point shooters the same way in their face. When that's the part that I just do not understand. And then to review it and then to come back, we're not saying that it should be upgraded to a flagrant. We're not saying anything. But to reverse the call that was made on the court and say, if the ball is gone and then there was marginal contact, he got hit in the face. Wasn't a flagrant, just a simple foul. But that play right there, I'm just confused. I will never understand. That makes me question everything I know about basketball, that isn't a foul. I'm not here to talk about the 20-point lead. I'm not here to talk about that happens in the game of basketball. That specific play, that one needs deeper clarification.
Yeah, I honestly don't. Again, I'm more of an optimistic human being. And you guys have been up. You were up 14, and then you got up 20 twice in Denver.
Gotta win.
You gotta win one of those. Like, and you can use that in your mind. Use the D'Lo play, which was a huge play, right, mm-hmm. for both sides. You could use Bron missing. You could use Jamal Murray's shot. You could use any of it. But you were up twice, 20. So whatever you were doing at halftime, Denver made adjustments. So if I'm the Lakers, you got to have it's just chess. You can't just move your piece and then just be like, we win. There's other pieces to be made during that time, and they need to do that. And hopefully the crowd is crazy during the next game.
Do you foresee the adjustment with Aaron Gordon sticking on Anthony Davis and what the counter could be for the Lakers, if so?
That had nothing to do to a certain degree. You give credit to them. I don't think that had anything to do with AD's lack of success or opportunities in the fourth quarter. I just don't. Like, you're not talking about putting a bigger defender. Like, AD had guarded him at different points and times. The Lakers just stopped playing the style of basketball that helped get them to that space. And then they lost the momentum and they didn't hit enough shots. You hold them to 101 points. You hold the Denver Nuggets to 101 points at home. You had them; they had them at like 85 points with 5-6 minutes to go. Defensively, you were outstanding. For Anthony Davis, and everyone gets a piece of the blame pie. Him, Darvin Ham, Bron, everybody on their team. Yeah. We know, like, in certain instances, hey, Kyrie needs to get some touches. That second quarter was for Kyrie just to shoot the ball. And we were all out there to hold down the fort and to allow Kyrie to get the rhythm, and so he could get his touches, he can get his feel, he could go 0-for-4, he could go 4-for-4. This was Kyrie's moment, right? We knew that. We knew that our job was to go out there and be in that space with him if you were in that second unit. So it was like, we know when guys need touches. AD, over the course of different instances in the fourth quarter for the Lakers, have kind of not gotten the touches he should. They didn't play through him like he should. So in that moment, you were playing great defense. You were doing all the things. Champions can sustain their greatness for longer than non-champions. That's the difference. So the Lakers didn't sustain their greatness by playing through AD. Even if AD would have gone 0-for-5 in the fourth quarter, then you could say, hey, look, we got what stuck with our horse. He didn't make shots. He'll be better next game. They didn't do that. So he just didn't get shot attempts. And now you're looking at, like, yes, there were some plays, but this was like, why didn't we win the game? It's like, well, Bron did well. D'Lo did well. You guys didn't play good basketball in the final 5-6 minutes playing through the person that had 30-something points going into the fourth, and he got one shot attempt. That's just bad basketball.
Let me ask you guys this, and then we'll move on from this series. The Lakers had, to your point, Channing, they were up 20. They were 37-0 when leading by 20. Okay, they've been 37-0. They've also been beat by the Denver Nuggets 10 straight times. You have to go back to 2022, December 16. I asked this one, have you guys ever been beat that many times in a row by a single opponent? And is there a psychological fact? Because when you look at it, Rich, to your point, 101 points on their home floor. They've won 33 games this year. We know how dominant they are. You hold them to 23% from three. You hold them to 44% from the field. How do you explain it? Is it mental?
I have a question. What is, and this could be me just spitballing something. What is AD's usual touches in the fourth quarter? Because to me, I think, remember, we had a conversation with this early in the year about how they shy away from him. So if I'm Denver, if no matter what is happening in the first through the third quarter, I go, even if he's killing, I know they're not going to that, right? I know that he shuts it off here instead of being like, yo, man, throw me the rock. So for Denver, they go, let's keep it close. Just chip away, because they're going to go back to playing a different whole style of basketball that feeds into our style of game, right? Instead of relying and totally putting it on AD.
I think this is the narrative in the past.
Really quickly, Allie, really quickly. Channing, you've played with Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Popovich, Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, obviously LeBron and Kyrie. Like right. those would be, in my opinion, like the stars the that best, you
yeah.
like. In the fourth quarter, those guys were either asking for touches, telling they wanted touches, or yeah. going and getting touches.
Yeah.
Right? Like that. Like Steve Nash is different. He's a point guard. But like Amari, there wasn't
He went and got the ball, though. He went and got the ball.
But I'm saying Amari, you weren't worried about was Amari going to get his touches in the fourth. yeah. You were never going to shout. Like, see you laughing.
Yeah.
And Anthony Davis is considered a better player than yeah, Amari Stoudemire. Sure. You're laughing at the thought that Amari didn't get touches in the fourth quarter. You're like, what? No, that's our – that horse, stop. If he touched the ball, I go.
Hey,
exactly.
He called timeout himself.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying everyone gets a piece of it. The teammates got to know that's our horse. We got to feed him. Right. The coach has got to get him play call. He's got to speak up. He's got to be more aggressive. He's got to say something at a timeout to Darvin right. or Braun or like, yo, let me get some touches. Three, 4 minutes go in the fourth quarter and you feel it start to kind of slip away or the rhythm and they're battling back. You're like, yo, let me get 3-4 touches. You know what I'm saying? Let me get 2 touches in a row.
How much to in this situation with Anthony Davis, though, because to all of that, I mentioned this to you the other day, Richard, this hasn't been a narrative for Anthony Davis this year, and he played a career high 76 games. Right. In fact, one of the most recent games I can remember them needing to go or simply going away from AD or him become non-existent was game one against Denver to open up the season. Remember in the second half, completely non-existent.
That's what it was. Okay.
There were very few times this year that was the case.
It might be Denver. It might just be.
So honestly, having said that, how much, though? Because he hit 14 straight shots, right, in the first half. AD did. But he picked up his fourth foul with 2.5. Nah. I'm not
and
making
fuck them fouls. Hey, fuck them fouls. Fuck 14 straight?
Fuck
them fouls.
What?
Hey, listen. 14 what? Straight
I'm just trying to answer. I'm just like, trying to figure out the answer.
If anything, I would be passing him the ball as he was checking into the game. back in. It's like bro, I'm not even in yet. I'm not even in yet. But get your ass into that.
Hey,
the minute you got back into that game, like, we calling timeouts to get you in this. Is he ready yet? Is he ready yet? Has enough time? We up there. We're playing stall. We're dribbling up for 23 seconds, letting 23 seconds going off. We just waiting for AD to come.
Fair, but as a former hooper, let's not act like being in foul trouble causes a different level of physicality. With 3 minutes left in the third, yes, it does.
We're just saying this. Our whole goal is to wait for that fucker to get back. Hold down the fort till the horse can come back in town.
Yeah.
Horse comes, sheriff is back in town.
Hold that door.
Here you go.
I want more Anthony Davis on the floor, so I hear you.
I'm just merely stating that, like, your mindset in that strategy moment is we got to hold on until he gets back, right? He's in foul trouble. Okay, we got to hold down the fort until he gets back. Like, they talk about the non-Jokic minutes. Those are the big for the fucking Denver Nuggets. The non-AD minutes when you get in foul trouble. But as soon as you come back, our job is to force feed you back into your rhythm that you were just
quickly.
In. Quickly. Because it might take you, you might miss 3 shots in a row, or you might come back in that bad boy and get cooking again, and now we're fine. But our job is if you miss 3 in a row, then you go and make your next 2, right? Like you make your next 2-3, now we fine, right? And if you go 0-5, 0-6 over that stretch, well, then shit, you making $60 million. It's your fault. I ain't going to be the person up here blamed for not giving the $60 million man his motherfucking ball. That's just facts. So
sure.
Yes, rhythm and all these things. I'm telling you from a player mindset, when you got a dog like that, that shit, as soon as you come back in the game, fat cheer, motherfucker.
So let's bridge the gap between this series now, fair, and another exciting one. Channing, you're right. There's so many good ones. Truth or trash? We're going to bring this back. Stephen A. Smith is right. Truth or trash? Jokic will have a better legacy than Kevin Durant.
Well, first of all, it's not his question. Let's just start off. Stephen A is right. I'm a hate on Stephen A. It's not like he came up with that question.
Come up with a question. He came up with a statement. Asking you if you agree with the statement.
I'm giving you shit. I'm giving him some shit, is what I'm saying. Yes, like at this rate, yes. At this rate, three MVPs. Undoubtedly the best player in the game of basketball at this point in time. Not and he won a championship, and he was the focal point of the best team, not the best player on the best team. Those are two different things. Like Kevin Durant winning a championship in Oklahoma City with the team that was built around him, with players that were drafted around him, which in all we all believe if he would have stayed there, they would have won one. I think that they would have won one, right? I don't even give a shit if they
all of them. All of them.
I'm saying like they had the talent.
Within how many years?
Well, I'm just saying it takes time. I'm saying, look, they were up 3-1. If he doesn't go join the Golden State Warriors, don't tell me that they aren't that, you know, with the cap and all the extra money that was going to be out there, that OKC couldn't have signed a player, kept Russ and all the guys that they had, and actually gone back the next year against a team that they were up 3-1 against. That's what was kind of some of the knock for him at a small portion of time. I think that Jokic, if you talk about regular season, if he wins this MVP, he's already surpassed him from a regular season standpoint. Because if you go, Kevin Durant had like youngest to hit all of these like point milestones where he's breaking triple double records. He's fastest to this. If you go look at statistics, there, Jokic has been the best player in the league for longer than any stretch that Kevin Durant. Now, mind you, it was because of LeBron. So that means that he gets into a different conversation a player when you've passed Kevin Durant as like Kevin Durant was the best player in the league for X amount of time. Jokic has been that for an extended period of time. So he's now being in put in a game. If he wins a second championship, two finals MVPs, three regular season MVPs, now you start putting him in the conversation of like the Tim Duncans, the Olajuwons, like you start putting him into a different
put him in Oscar top Robertson, 12, top 15.
Oscar Robertson, yeah, you start putting him in that conversation with those guys because those are the only guys that have resumes that matches him. He's already got more MVPs. He's got more MVPs than Kevin Durant. So if he wins two championships and two finals MVPs, and even like they're not all created equal, the structure of both of those, you would say what Jokic did, averaging a triple-double on his way to a championship, beating Bron in the conference finals?
Yeah. I'll say this. What else helps? His pathway was harder, but it looks cleaner on paper. On paper, you're like, Jokic went to the Nuggets, stayed with the Nuggets, won these championships with a Nugget team and a Nugget coach, right? It's a straight line. There's with no All-Stars on his team, no Defensive Player of the Years on his team, didn't move. And not only is he dominant at what he does, but he's dominant at every facet of basketball except for defense. He's not dominant on defense, but he doesn't suck.
But right? rebounding wise, you would say that like because defensive rebounding is a big part of defense, right? Averaging, you know, well, the guys that lead the league in rebounding, it's not just like the offensive rebound numbers, defense. So defensive rebounding, he's got his hands on that ball at all points. Time. So from that standpoint, defensively, yes. So, like,
as an overall basketball player, if we were to just have a panel and each person had to pick a player, and I got Jokic, right? I could argue and say Jokic is the best scorer in the league when he wants to. He's the best passer in the league when he wants to. He's the best rebounder in the league when he wants to. He's the best team leader. He's the most clutch. Like, I could argue these things that Kevin Durant at certain time could only say he's unstoppable at guarding, he's above average defensively, he's an shooter or an passer.
Playmaker.
But you know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying, now mind you, Kevin Durant is, you know, 10 to 15 all time.
Danny, I got a question.
Yeah.
And I want you to say this from what you believe. If you had to start a team.
Oh, Jokic, don't even ask me that. You don't even need, it doesn't even, what? You don't know why?
Why?
Everyone is eating on his team.
I just wanted to explain.
Look at the young guys that are playing with him. Look at Aaron Gordon's career. Look at Jamal Murray's career. Look at the winning that they do and how they win. And for his biggest knock was, he doesn't like basketball. When you actually watch the Nuggets play, he may talk more than Luka, and Luka doesn't stop talking. You look at how he talks to his teammates. You look at his passion. He doesn't miss games. His durability is crazy. And before we got on, we were looking at his build. as much as he touches the ball, he looks exhausted, but has levels to his game where he is making the right play almost every single time in crunch time, which shows that conditioning is not a factor to him, even at his usage rate.
When it comes to this conversation, what is KD missing?
No, I think KD's not missing anything. We're talking about from a standpoint of like one player might be ranked 11th in your book, one person might be ranked 13th in your book, right? Like that is not, it's your, KD is not missing anything. I think I look at Jokic as a more complete all overall basketball player. Like Kevin Durant's always been a better overall scorer than LeBron. Yeah. We've always said that. There's like from like the level of a weapon, like his ability to hit shots, his game. Like if you ask me who I want the hand, who do I want taking the last shot? Do I want KD or Bron? Look, we're probably gonna sit up here and say KD, right? From like a skill standpoint, like he's that. Who do I want from the ball in their hands that needs to either make a shot or make the right play? I'm picking LeBron, right? Make the shot or make the right play. That's LeBron. Jokic just.
What about Jokic in that conversation?
Oh, I'm picking LeBron over Jokic. I'm picking LeBron over Jokic because I think LeBron over time has proven that like he's just going to make that play or go score and has done it on both. And Jokic is in that. That's what I'm saying. Jokic has reached into a category of like past the I am the singular great space.
The two man. Sorry to go back to the Denver conversation, but the two man of those two down the stretch in those final possessions, when I went back and watched it, they don't even need to call in timeout. They know exactly what they want, where they want to get to. Jokic helping with the screening of Jamal Murray, making sure that he doesn't have to have the ball. Like,
Channing, back me up on this. Jamal Murray, because of his injuries and because of some the timing of them, that is the only reason why he's not an all-star. Right. Like they're going to say, and they're even when he does hit his first All-Star game, if he's healthy the first 65 games of the season, he'll be an All-Star because Denver will be a top three team. So when he gets there and they'll be like, oh, well, he wasn't an All-Star. No. He was only not an All-Star because of injuries. Right. He has been, he was progress. They were in the conference finals 4 years ago with him as a starting point guard and balling. Right. And then he has injuries and he misses two postseasons. And then he comes back and now they're like, they win a championship. And then this year they look like they're headed that way. He just hasn't gotten the all-star nod because the West is so deep in guards. But if you tell me, do I want Jamal Murray or a lot of these other Western Conference all-star guards? I'm picking Jamal Murray. Off the ball, on the ball. Like
especially in the playoffs.
Late game clutch ability. Are you kidding me? Like Jamal Murray, and say this is crazy. Jamal Murray, in my opinion, has already is getting close. I'm going to fight these statements. When you think about in the postseason, would you rather have Jamal Murray or James Harden? Now, they're two different players. What they're expected to do is very, very different. But when you watch the late game play between the two of them in fourth quarters and big moments – over the course of their career, James Harden's a lot older. But if you say I can point to four or five moments for James Harden being that dude, I could probably point to the same amount for Jamal Murray in a much shorter time. We're talking about bubble year, last year, this year.
Yeah.
Now, James Harden had to be the best player on his championship team. He had to be the best player on his championship team and during those runs. So it's not apples to apples. But I'm just saying from a playoff moment standpoint in a short amount of time, he's given us a long enough leash to let us know he's that dude. And he would probably have two more years if it wasn't for tearing the ACL and then missing the following season.
Fair to say he hasn't even reached his prime yet. He's 27. Jamal's 27.
Yeah. With missing 20.
I'm not saying in his prime, but like, has he started?
Yeah. Yes. And he's met, begun? He missed 24 and 25. He missed 24, missed 25, won a championship in 26. Now he's 27.
I think that the most dangerous thing about them was like there was the interview he was doing. They were like, well, what are you like? Do you guys have the plays or like what is the deal with like you in these moments? And he was just like, it's just feel right. I forgot where was that. Hopefully I quoted that right. He was like, it's just Jamal? Feel. Yeah.
Yeah. He said it the other night. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, you're fucked.
Although I will give you this stat. I'll give you this stat. Yeah. I think, Rich, I gave it to you yesterday. Denver, Their starting and closing lineup, which is the same five-man lineup, has played more minutes together on the floor over the last two seasons than any other five-man lineup in the NBA.
Channing, really quickly. We both played in unique offenses, right? Yeah. Like I played with the Nets, and Channing, you remember when it was Jason Kidd and was just a bunch of speedsters around him, right?
Yeah.
Same with Steve Nash and like the game that you guys played. When you are those high-level teams and you have a system and a core group, because I would say Jokic is like Jason Kidd. He is like Steve Nash. So my point is this. When you guys were flowing, was there any thinking?
No.
There was very little talking. There was very little talking. It's like, you go here, I'm going to go here, then he's going to go there, and it's over. You're like, it was like even the plays we would run with the Cavs. You're like, well, if you leave me, then you going to give up a dunk, or then you going to give up an open three. If you go over there, you better go over there. You go, Richard going to dunk it. He's going to that backdoor lob. And if you don't, then you know that ball's going to be to you on a laser. So you were so like there's no thinking. Greatness means that there's no thinking involved and they're all one mind and they have reached that. There's very few teams that have reached that where it's just like watching them play. It's the sum of all the parts.
Yeah.
Right. Like each one of them are not like they're not like this big three. But if you leave Aaron Gordon, Jokic is going to lob it up to him, or he's going to throw a lob to a 6'7" bouncy human being, right? And if you come in on him, he's got everyone around them. And all of them are just waiting to see what you do for the shot that they get. And he is the orchestrator of that. So you don't have to worry about someone taking too many shots or missing too many shots. He is the navigator of all of that. So you don't have to worry about someone being selfish or playing too much one-on-one. They don't have one-on-one players. They've got two of them, Jokic and Jamal Murray. So all of the one-on-one moments and shots go to those two, and then that's what makes them step up in the fourth quarter. Jamal Murray hits big shots. Jokic hits big shots. So there is none. System, they got you from a one brain and one system, an individual one-on-one when you need a bucket, when they say in the final minute, when you need a bucket, they got two of the best. That's the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah. Who has to step up more for the Phoenix Suns?
Oh, don't get me started.
Please.
Dude,
the floor is yours.
Hey, one, Mark Jackson made a great point, right? I've read what he said, or heard what he said. He said, Minnesota has no respect for Phoenix. And like literally, they're waiting for Phoenix to throw a punch back. What I saw last night, it looked like the go cook 'em theory isn't going to work there. Like, Anthony Edwards, they have no, and great as KD is and Booker is, Minnesota has no fear for what they can do above what their defense can lock down. Like, Jaden McDaniels and that squad are hounding Phoenix. And if you watch the end of that game, and I know it's frustrating, but like Devin Booker running all over the place and kind of fouling out and KD just chilling on the side and not really making plays and Bradley Beal not being effective. And then you look at like the guy that was actually playing with some force downhill was like Devin Eubanks, right? Drew Eubanks, not Devin. Drew Eubanks. Right? Who's Devin Eubanks?
He's a player too. He's a player too.
Oh, was he? Okay, my bad. Scouting report. But was like, he? I don't know. But like, for me,
I've had to fight saying Devin. That's the thing that comes in my head too.
Yeah, but for me, Phoenix, they look like a sign of a bad team is when somebody scores, everyone looks around like this, like, was that you? Was that me? And then they have not solved the issue of KD. And here's what I was going to say about KD and Jokic. Jokic is like Superman and can be part of a team. Right? And can bring people together with him, right? Because he knows that his strength, even though he's unstoppable, he can't do it himself, right? So he brings the team together, right? Other guys that he uplifts them. KD is Batman. I'm going to do these things by myself. Y'all come with me. If I go to the Warriors, I make the Warriors better. If I go to OKC, I make OKC better. The Nets and now the Suns. But the problem is Devin Booker has the same attitude that KD does. And so they don't ever think differently because they're so elite at what they do, but they're just like, oh, yeah, here, your turn. But it's not in the flow of the game, and Minnesota's able to take that away. and then shots aren't, there's no, it's like a car with three wheels, right? You got to lean it the right way to move. And so Minnesota, give them credit. Like, they don't back down. They're not.
No,
they've been impressive.
No, I'm with Channing on that. I think this is the thing, like, the no respect, yeah, I think the Phoenix Suns still have to not lose. They had no depth. And to lose Grayson Allen, that's tough, right? He offered more space for them. Eric Gordon, but when you had Eric Gordon and Grayson Allen, now you have depth at that floor spacer. Now you have just Aaron Gordon. And he played well. He gave you 15 points, right? But these dudes, Jaden McDaniels, Anthony Edwards, all of these dudes are coming in with defensive mindsets because they want to attack. They feel like they are playing like they have something to prove. And they have offensive weapons. If you tell me Anthony Edwards or Devin Booker or Bradley Beal, who's going to play with more defensive intensity? Who's going to try and impact the game more defensively? I would say it would be Anthony Edwards. Now, Devin Booker does a lot of things defensively. I just think from a physical standpoint, capabilities, like Anthony Edwards has the ability to be a top three defensive player, period, or definitely the best perimeter defender because he's a big guard that can block shots.
Well, next to Jaden McDaniels, yes.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. But the group of them, so those dudes are going out there defensively trying to compete. I can't say the same thing for the Phoenix Suns that they're trying to – Minnesota's trying to bust your ass on the offensive end. They're trying to bust your ass and look at you and talk that shit. And on the defensive end, they're trying to lock you down and talk that shit. I don't see the same intensity on both ends of the floor for the Phoenix Suns, nor do they have the depth at the same as Minnesota.
Or the length, or the athleticism. Disrespect paired with a luxury. Did you guys see Jaden McDaniels said when he's on the floor, by the way, after a career offensive night for him,
he's
on the floor with him, Ant, and I believe he said Alexander Walker. He said they look at each other. They just said, who do you want?
Yeah, that's a problem.
Like, yeah, that's a problem.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so who you want? Like, who you want? And look, yeah. Make no mistake. Look at Kevin Durant.
I don't care. Whoever you want. Look, whoever you listen, got. Like, what? Listen,
Kevin Durant, 6-for-15. Bradley Beal, 6-for-17. Devin Booker, 6-for-13. Like, them dudes is looking at, like, Anthony Edwards was 3-for-12. And so it was like, it wasn't like he was cooking. The three of them looked at him and was like, which one you want? And I've been on teams like that. He knows this. My Nets team, and we'll do a history lesson, 2001, we couldn't score. We were just me, Kenyon, J. Kidd, Kerry Kittles, and we had Jason Collins as our just goon. He was our big perk that was just fouling, but he was great, very good defensive center. Very, very good. So then we had four guys that were just wing players that was like, J. Kidd would take them sometimes, I would take them sometimes, Rip Hamilton, like all these different guys. Reggie Miller, Kerry Kittles would guard. We put a bigger body on me. You put my young golden retriever ass on him. So I'm just saying you could just rotate defensively. We would all take turns on whoever. That's what helped us did this. Minnesota Timberwolves are the same way on the defensive end. They're just like, yo, they feel the same with Anthony Edwards, McDaniels, or Walker. They feel the same with those three guys guarding all three guys.
Yeah.
And those three are Hall of Famers.
And think about who's behind them, too. So Mike Conley Jr. has been on an all-defensive team. You know, Anthony Edwards will be on an all-defensive team. Alexander Walker, before his end of his career, right? And then Jaden McDaniels, obviously, is going to be on all-defensive team. And then you have Rudy Gobert, who, whether you like him or not, is still a monster down there. And actually is.
Yes, yes.
He's been empowered on this team, not as the, because he made some mistakes. And do you know who ran over to him first? And I noticed that because when he was on Utah and he made mistakes, everyone just walked away. When he makes mistakes, Anthony Edwards and Mike Conley Jr. go to him and say, come on, man, get your head up. So that chemistry for him allows him to stay motivated on both ends of the floor. They're throwing him the rock on mismatches. Now, whether he makes it or not, he's being aggressive. He's not like, you know, the old Rudy Gobert. So, you know, I used to be a Rudy Gobert, like, man, get this dude off the court. But on this team, he's free reign. Oh, yeah, he's free
reign. And those three dudes also, this is the thing. This is the part that we can't discount about Rudy. And I don't buy the whole whether you like him or not. I feel what you're saying, Channing. I'm saying this. part of the reason why those three dudes can go be those dudes is they got that horse behind them named Rudy Gobert. That allows them to pressure up on the defensive end and allow them to use that ability. Those three can be literally in your shit. And then coming back, Rudy Gobert cleans up every mistake. And the offensive players are now deciding from pressure, taking the pressure and going into more pressure. So if Rudy Gobert was out of there and they had Zubac, they would, I don't know if they would even be a top 10 defensive team, maybe a top 12. They would probably be in that range with the defensive pressure and length that they've had. But with Rudy there, that's what boosts them to number one. That's why he gets, because Rudy with wing defenders, that is a problem defense. That is a problem defense.
Yeah.
You and with the Lakers, when the Lakers had AD and all those dudes, and then you had Alex Caruso, you had KCP. Like, you guys could, like, you guys would have scoring droughts, but those guys were allowed to pressure up because you had AD, fucking JaVale McGee, and you had Dwight back there. But when you got that behind you and wing pressure, you get the number one defense. That's what the Lakers had. That's when AD should have won Defensive Player of the Year. If you look at the formula, it's been the same. Wing defenders can pressure up. You know what the Lakers would do for Alex Caruso or KCP right now?
Stop it. We're moving on. The Clippers and the Mavs. I hate everything about that conversation.
Let me start this shit off.
Oh, God.
First of all, Channing, and I'm so glad you're here. I had a moment this week where I did not realize that everyone doesn't play in 7-game series. So I made the statement.
Yeah,
I made the statement of, hey, look, don't forget, after you lose, the team that loses game one has the advantage. And I said it continued, and that's where they took the clip. The rest of the statement was, because you have the strategic advantage going into game two. Now,
can I tell you, I open my Twitter every day right now, and it's like, it's okay, Lakers. Richard Jefferson said you still have a chance. You have the advantage. But,
and the funniest
it's not wrong.
But that's what's so funny is, like, the funniest thing for me is, and again, I have never, one thing that anybody ever listened to this podcast, I could give two fucks if the internet is making fun of me. I do not care. I help them. I do not care. I will help send content. I feed you content of me just making fun of myself. My point is this. We get an opportunity to use this as a teaching moment, right? I did not know that people didn't know this stuff. But then I thought to myself, Richard, how many people have coached or participated in a 7-game professional sports series? None. So Channing, I'll let you go on this. When you lose a game, you have the strategic advantage from the standpoint. When you win, you don't change much. You don't change much. You might tweak some things, right? You might say, hey, our guys are going to play better. We're going to tweak some things. We're going to clean up some things. They always ask the losing coach, what adjustments are you going to make going into game two? The reason why is because the adjustments that you make, whether you're going to change your starting lineup, whether you're going to go big, whether you're going to go small, whether or not you're going to take your starters out, one or two of them early, and bring them back earlier in the second quarter so that they can play more against the second unit. Now, when you do that, you discuss it, you practice, you strategize with it, you make your game plan, you script through the plays and shoot around and in practice. So now you understand what you're going to go into. Then you go play against a team that has no idea what adjustments you've made until real time. So now they're playing their normal lineups, and all of a sudden the starters come out earlier in the first quarter, and now you're like, oh shit, they got the starters versus our second unit. And so now that unit then goes on a big run, and now you're forced to bring your starters back in earlier. So it's a chess match. And so the strategic advantage is that they didn't have time to prep, and they don't know what you're going to do. Now, the better team is going to win. And sometimes it doesn't matter what you do. From a strategic advantage, the game one loser has the advantage going into. That is why when we make an adjustment and we go down 3-1, we make an adjustment and we started playing more small. We changed our lineups. Channing took a seat on the bench. And then next thing you know, they couldn't make an adjustment to our adjustment.
I started there.
So I will allow you guys to make fun of me all you want. The only thing I ask is that you take that piece of knowledge and understand that that's why they compare the NBA game to a chess match. It's because you're constantly making adjustments in real time, and sometimes one team has more time to prep. So it's like when you can prep for your opponent for 7 days versus when you are waiting to see in a game seven situation who you are going to play next. That means you have to prep for both teams equally. That doesn't lead you to an advantage. The teams that are playing in those games, they have an advantage because they know if they win, they're going to prep for one opponent.
Richard, the difference is that as you speak the gospel, you're speaking to a crowd that would force them to have to think and understand.
But that's my fault because I just assumed that everyone knows this, that like I assumed that somebody in the fucking history of broadcast television had ever communicated that. And I'm saying I had texts from everyone that was like, oh, I know what you're saying. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Like, they're players, right? They're players that are part of a 7-game series.
I had players that were young players that were in 7 games. Like, he goes, this is a rare good take from y'all. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I know exactly what you're saying. He's like, we don't know what adjustments they're going to make until they do them. And then in the game, it could be too late. Right. That's the adjustment. That's why you saw that's why you saw the Lakers play better in game two. That's why you saw Philly Dallas. Play better in game two. Why you saw Dallas play better in game two.
Indiana
played better in game two. Like, I stand by it. You have
to show. Will you give your fair, Richard? That was great. Will you give your take to Richard about Jokic and Luka?
So, hey, okay. To finish Richard's thought. In 2010, we played Portland Trailblazers. Coach said, Steve, you're going to guard Andre Miller this game, right? And if it doesn't work, next game, we're going to put you on Nicholas Batum, right? But he goes, I need you to play this one game. We're not going to put you on Batum all game long. They end up beating us by like 15. At the end of the game, we're having a beer. And he's like, yep, you're going to go guard Nick Batum. Now, it's not like he was hiding Steve on Nick Batum. It's just that he wanted Portland to go away from what they were comfortable with and force feed Nick Batum that second game. It ruined their rhythm because they stopped going to their main guys because their main guys had Grant Hill, Jason Richardson, Dudley, Barbosa, those guys on them, and started going to Nick Batum, who was more of a pass first 3-and-D kind of guy. So it helped us, right? And a lot of series were like that. Game two, honestly, is the hardest game if you're up. But to talk about Jokic and Luka, I think we talked about Luka's conditioning. I think we talked about Jokic's conditioning. But watching these guys, as much as their usage rate is, I've just been impressed that they have that motor to still make big plays down the stretch. Like Luka's no-look bounce pass to Kyrie, huge. Luka's step back, huge. Jokic's rebounding, his tap outs, his activity at the end of games is to me more impressive than him making a shot with the ball, right? Now, we had talked about, to go back to AD, we had talked about AD. I don't need AD to score 30 points. I need AD's activity level in his fire and his gut to be ridiculous at the end of the games. Now, if the game plan went away from him, are you making good tap outs? Is your energy up? I felt like last game he didn't get rebounds that I thought he had opportunities to because he was tired, which happens, right? Which happens during Denver. So I just give credit. So instead of putting AD down, right, because he's playing against Jokic, who's a monster, let's give credit to those guys whose usage rate, I think they said Jokic touched the ball 122 times in a game, which is ridiculous. And he's getting 25, 20, and 18 or something like that, 25, 20, and 16. Like, if you were to put, so that's 48, so 28, that's 68, not including his assist, would be like, 84 points. He contributed to 84 of his team's 101 points, whether that was assists, rebounds, or points, which is crazy.
And my thought here, Rich, was, and I hate I hate these comparison things, especially because when you're comparing the three of these individuals, they don't all play the same way. They're not all the same stylistically as players. But my take here was individually, the responsibility is just different, especially for Anthony Davis comparative to that of Luka and the Joker on the defensive end. Yet there's still an expectation of Anthony Davis to do it just about as dominant on the offensive end. So the way in which he's being utilized takes a different toll on him than that of, because you're not expecting Luka individually and the Joker individually to defend the same way you need Anthony Davis to defend. And then you're also, okay. Explain Sorry. It to me then.
Dude, I know. You love the Lakers, Allie. No,
I watch them every day.
This is what I'm going to say. Offensively, all three players are expected to score 30. Offensively.
Thank you.
I don't agree.
Let me say this.
I said that.
All three players are expected to score 30. Mm-hmm. On the defensive end, right? Right, the defensive end, because there are a lot of layers of basketball. On the defensive end, they are not all expected to do the same thing. AD is supposed to be 30 points a game dominant, the way he is saying 30 points a game offensively dominant, like impacting the game on that level. Jokic and Luka are not. But also, Anthony Davis is not expected to playmake to the tune of 9 to 15 assists a night. If Jokic doesn't do 9 to 15 assists a night, the Denver Nuggets offense is going to be flat, or they didn't shoot the ball well. If Luka does not facilitate with the amount that the ball is in his hands, if he doesn't facilitate between 9 and 15 assists, the Dallas Mavericks offense. So while AD has more responsibility on the defensive end than those two guys do, they have more responsibility from a playmaking standpoint and from like the focal point of the offense. So they got to score 30, create another 10, 11, 15 assist opportunities, and then defensively not as much. So where the energy that he gets to save from the playmaking, he gets the push to the defense.
And you're comparing defensive energy to that of playmaking.
I'm saying, for sure. Sense of usage
rate. And we're basically saying that the expectation is the same for all of them.
Exactly. From a usage rate, yes. Anthony Davis is expected to be so active. Now, make no mistake, when we talk about rebounds, Jokic is pulling down 15 rebounds a night, 20 rebounds. So from a defensive rebounding space, which is a large aspect of defense. So I'm saying, like, he's not expected to guard four or five positions, but Jokic is in every pick and roll because they're trying to attack him. Right. Yeah. So defensively, he is having to move his puppies, right? Yeah. He is having to do something. And then he's having to go secure that rebound. Right. So it's like, and he's doing that at a rate as well as Anthony Davis. Right. But he's not blocking shots. He's not maybe as good of contesting shots and putting people in a spot. You're not going at an Anthony Davis. That's a different space. But if you say from how much each player needs to be used, the fact that you don't have
from an energy standpoint, he can't believe that Jokic and Luka play at this high energy level the way they do. And I agree they do 1000%. But I also just think when you're talking energy and defense, don't discredit what has to be done and is required.
That's why LeBron and MJ's and those guys are different, because LeBron had to be Jokic on the offensive end and Luka, but he also at his peak was defensively as elite and effective as Anthony Davis. Like, he was a defensive player of the year candidate, averaging 27-7-7. So he was Luka plus a defensive candidate of the year, right?
Was that?
I'm saying he was Luka with being defensive player of the year candidate. That's who LeBron was.
Oh.
He was 38-9 and 37-7 was, you know what I'm saying, and defensive player of the year candidate. So he was Luka and AD kind of mix. That's why he is that human being, right? Those two guys don't have the same impact defensively, but from a usage rate, and Anthony Davis doesn't get an extra 20 touches a game that are forced to create for his teammates and then expected to also score 30. That would increase his usage rate. But where his usage rate does go up is the amount of defense that he's expected to impact on a daily basis, if that was simple enough.
But yes, I think I love Luka and the Mavs. I don't know what it is, but they are just clicking right now, right? And they're working through their mistakes, and you could see Kyrie. Luka's, God damn, I don't know, boy, listen, he must have white-saged everything, because he's out here fucking people up. Like the jump up reverse behind the back pass on the dime. Like people, they make it look so easy. It is not easy to catch an NBA pass in the air in a playoff game. Look and then wob it to him perfectly in his, and the rest of the guys are playing with really good energy. I don't know the stats, and I watched the game, right? And I watched the game with my son, and he's still learning, and we're watching like Zubat, and we're watching like Kawhi Leonard and those guys. I think this goes seven because I think Kawhi is going to get better and better and better, which is a problem, right, mm-hmm. as his conditioning gets better. But I also think that Luka thrives on that, on like people like me and media saying Kawhi's going to lock Luka down.
And nobody's locked Luka down.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. And
you can force him into a subpar game. And that's the thing, a subpar game with a person that has that much of a usage rate. If Luka has a subpar game and he has 22 points and he has 6 assists and 4 rebounds, we would all be like, that is locked up. He's shutting down. And you would say, if someone else doesn't play a huge game, if Kyrie doesn't go for 36, if someone doesn't hit 5 threes on their team, then they will not be able to overcome that. If someone told you that Kawhi Leonard was going to go 22-6-8, right, and that his team was going to win, you'd be like, yeah, I could see that, right? So the expectations on both
players, good game.
And the load that is expected to carry is very different.
I was surprised to see that Kawhi played 35 minutes. He hasn't played since March 31st. And that he means played 35 minutes, 15 points, 7 rebounds, 4 steals.
Could you imagine if Kawhi had 33-9-8, you would be like, "Oh, the Clippers are never losing."
Yeah. Facts.
That
he also I didn't realize this either. He also played 68 of his first 74 games.
He did.
Yeah.
I was surprised the game one. I thought they just shut him down. I was surprised for the game one. And even in talking to people in the Clippers organization when they were up, they're like, "Oh, I just think we bought ourselves more time with Kawhi." So I'm not questioning it. I just thought there might be a level of like, he overdid it. There was some inflammation. We're just going to shut you down. You're 100% healthy. Let's just get this inflammation out. We'll have you ready for the postseason. But then he missed game one. So you're like, "Oh, well, that's not good." You know, you make good money, you're like, "Oh, throws that out the window," you know? So, but he was, 35 minutes in game two is weird. That is very confusing.
And his first game back.
Yeah, and your first game back and all the, you know, the this and that. I'm not for load management and minute restrictions, but I haven't seen a lot of guys miss 2 months and play 35 minutes on their first day.
Well, my thing would be this.
You didn't miss 2 months.
Well, my thing is this. Like, number one, it was a close game.
I meant two weeks.
Well, it was a close game, one. Number two, you would say, we need to push you. We can't have a minute restriction. We need to push you so that your body is going to react, and we need to see what's going to happen.
Do you think that they were telling Kawhi we were going to do this to him? Kawhi's like, I'm able to go for 35 minutes and 1 second, not a second longer. I will be checking myself out of the game. No. Use that information as you choose. That is 100% Kawhi. Excuse me, Tilu, I just checked with myself, and I will be playing 34 minutes tonight, not a minute more. All right, thank you. So just prepare for overtime if that's needed. Just kind of guard that, but just guard that at my max.
Dude, I can – hey, if you 34 minutes, I can run them 34 minutes. You get that first six, then you get that six-minute break, then you get a next six, and then we got you for the whole second half, buddy.
All right, clearly you guys can see that we're excited to be back. This is the longest podcast we've done in like 3 years.
Oh, sure.
Having said all of that, can we just give a shout out to the family affair that's going on in the Eastern Conference between the Orlando Magic and the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh. They're like all buddies.
Yeah.
Dude, so it's crazy.
So people that don't know, is Brett Brillmeyer on that staff too? Is Brett Brillmeyer in Orlando?
Yeah. So is Mermis.
Yeah. Well, so it's just funny that the Orlando Magic and Cleveland Cavaliers staffs are all like best friends. So Jesse Mermis, JB Bickerstaff, Jamal Mosley, Luke Walton, they all go on family vacations together. They've all been friends for 20 years. Jesse, I used to play against in high school. He was on the staff with the Lakers, went to Luke to Sacramento. Then he went and joined Jamal Mosley. Then Luke went and joined JB. These are all like best friends, and they're all in the playoff series. So I started a text chain with the four of them on it, Jamal Mosley, JB Bickerstaff, Luke Walton, and Jesse Mermis. And then I live text them their game and no one responds to me. It's the funniest shit. I'll show it to you.
If you guys had to pick one staff to be an assistant on, a behind the bench coach out of those two staffs, which one would you choose?
Look, I'm going to show you guys. It's the name of the thing says, fuck you, Richard. Oh, where'd it go? Oh, the name of the thing says, fuck you, Richard.
Put it down.
And no one's responding. Only you? No one's responding. No one's responding. I'm just talking trash. I'm live texting their game.
I know they're seeing it.
And it was like, oh. It was like Cleveland held court. Can't wait for Orlando. Uh-oh, did I speak too soon? 12-0 run Orlando. Nope, Donovan.
What is wrong with you? You psycho. Seriously, we need that on a t-shirt.
Teddy knows that they're not allowed to talk and it's killing them. It's kind of like when we played against Luke when he was with the coach.
Him and
like,
Darren Collins.
They're not talking to each other. They would have gone to dinners during the regular season. They would go to dinners. Their families would be hanging out. Their families vacation together. And now I just get to tweet and – or I'm not tweeting. I'm just texting, live texting them in the middle of the game. So after the game, they're not finding it funny. And I find it hilarious.
Seriously, if you guys had to pick a staff, which one would you go to?
Orlando, I like the younger team. No offense.
Your favorite place, your favorite NBA city.
We're not talking about the city. We said staff. We're not talking about the city. We said staff.
If I had to go staff, I'd have to ride. It's tough. That's close, but I'd have to ride with JB and Luke only because I'd be going back to Cleveland.
It's not so a Cleveland thing. It's a team and a organization. And
for me, if you ask what staff on what city I would be joining, don't get me wrong, Orlando, look, Cleveland are,
as you said, fuck you, Richard. You're not even paying attention to the rules.
I love you. That's my rule.
That's
my staff.
Speaking of, get all your gear at homage.com/roadtrippin. Put that on a t-shirt, please, homage. Thank you. As well as 18.2. What is 18.2 mil?
What?
Resonate with, how do you guys know that number?
I don't.
18.2 million.
Is that the Caitlin Clark thing? Is that the Caitlin Clark money?
See, I'm telling you, just put 18.2 mil on a t-shirt and everyone would understand. It's not the money. It's the viewers for the NCAA tournament. All right. Having said that, you guys are wonderful. Hopefully next week we have a guest. There's supposed to be a guest anticipated to be on this make our official announcement of what's next for Road Trippin', but we are back. We're super excited to be here. So
yeah.
Shout out.
Shout out.
Fuck you, Richard. Bye.